The following is a production of Different Brains. Visit us at differentbrains.org.
Hi, and welcome to Spectrumly Speaking. I'm Becca Laurie. I'm your house Aspie, your favorite book nut, and also maybe your favorite chapter and your favorite story. And I'm joined here by
Dr. Kate Cody. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist who practices in New York City at Spectrum Services. I work with kids through adults who are on the autism spectrum doing diagnostic evaluations and therapy services. And I also supervise and train graduate students so that we have more clinicians out there in the world who know how to effectively support this population. So that's kind of about me. How's your week, Becca?
My week was good. I have some writing that I'm doing again, and I had a whole bunch of meetings kind of set up, but I was noticing that I was feeling kind of down in the dumps, kind of sort of feeling really the change in the seasons and everything. But I decided that if I spent some time kind of working on my writing, then I might feel some better. So like doing some creating and stuff. So I did do that, and that's helped a lot. So I spent a lot of time by myself writing this week. I don't really have much to tell.
It sounds like it was probably pretty restorative.
It was. It was really, it was something not only that I had to do because I had deadlines, but also that it was really a healthy way to kind of take all the stuff that I was thinking about alone in my head and kind of put it to use. It's good. And what about you? What was your week like?
So, you know what? I really function well when I have a plan, and I was struggling because I didn't have a plan for the holidays, and I didn't know exactly what I was going to be doing this year because every year is a little bit different for me. And I finally solidified my plan, and I feel really good now.
Yeah, you're like relieved.
Planning makes me so happy.
I know. See, this is one of our bonding moments because we're such planners, and when a plan goes well, and like checking your boxes off is so fun. So it's like such a pleasure to do that. I know that feeling. I have some things that I'm right now, which may be why I'm so uncomfortable in my own skin, because I have some things that I haven't settled. And so because of that, I'm feeling uncomfortable. Well, now I should go settle my plans then.
I know. I feel like a great weight has been lifted off of my shoulders now that I know what my plan is. But I think it's funny because I think a lot of times we talk so much about things like this as being kind of very Aspie specific, and that's so not true.
It's so not true.
It's so not true because I think we all have things like I really thrive when I have a plan, and that is something that I value and is important to me. And I think, again, it just comes back to that self-awareness component.
It's so funny because it makes a difference that you know that about yourself, because it impacts how you effectively work in a day. So it's really hard for me, probably for you too, to like hang out with non-planners. That's really hard for me to do that.
It is a real struggle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, when people are not planners, I have my own like does not compute moments about those individuals. Even though I know that that's not how everyone operates, but for me, it is a struggle. But it is funny, you know, how that's one of the things that you and I have in common in terms of like our own interpersonal style and our needs and everything too.
Yep, absolutely.
Which kind of leads into our guests for today, which we're really excited to have. We have two guests for the first time. So today we have joining us, Christina Nicolaitis and Dora Raymaker. I'm going to introduce, Christina so everyone has a sense of who they are. Christina Nicolaitis, MD and MPH, is a professor at Portland State University. She is a physician scientist who has spent most of her career partnering with marginalized communities to improve their health and healthcare. She co-directs the Academic Autism Spectrum Partnership in Research and Education, or ASPIRE, and is editor-in-chief of a new academic journal, Autism in Adulthood, that will be launching in 2018. She also practices and teaches internal medicine at Oregon Health and Science University.
Yep, and our other guest is also from ASPIRE. Dora Raymaker, PhD, is an assistant research professor at the Portland State University's Regional Research Institute and co-directs the Academic Autistic Spectrum Partnership in Research and Education, ASPIRE, a community campus partnership conducting research to improve the lives of adults on the autism spectrum. Her research interests include community-engaged practices, accessible technology, measurement adaptation, and knowledge translation, and dynamics in the intersection of science, society, and public policy. Dr. Raymaker primarily conducts research in collaboration with disability communities. Please welcome Christina and Dora to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. We're so excited to have you both. Excited to have another pair of women who work in a neurodiverse relationship, which I love. And I'm going to start our questions off with the place we like to start with most of our guests, which is to ask you guys how you got involved in the autism community. And I thought it might be nice to start with Dora.
So I'm kind of old. So when I was a child, autism wasn't in the DSM yet. So I didn't get involved in the community until I was in my 30s. And I was working in a technology company where the people I worked with started sort of pointing at me and saying, we think we know what's up with you. So that's where I got the keyword autism from. And when I started looking into it and realized that really did describe me, it was kind of uncomfortable, actually, because I had spent so much of my life coming to terms with the fact that whatever my experiences were unique and weird and disabling, and I just had to kind of deal with it and make peace with it. And then all of a sudden to realize that, no, I wasn't the only one who had these experiences, that there was a whole community of people out there who shared in that, was actually kind of a lot and a lot to process. And it took me quite a while to kind of reverse 30 years of thinking about my identity in order to integrate this new identity into who I am, and to realize that I wasn't a broken person trying to make my way through the world, but that I was actually exactly as I was supposed to be in a world that wasn't necessarily supportive of my needs. So that was a big turnaround. But once I came to terms with that, I got pretty involved in autistic rights and in the autistic community. And my background is actually a little bit kind of radical and punk rock. And I spent a lot of time with the gay rights movement in the 80s and 90s. So falling into disability rights felt very natural to me. So that's my story.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing. Christina, you want to go ahead and tell us how you got involved in the community?
Yeah, well, so my first sort of connection to autism was about 14 years ago when my son was diagnosed as being on the spectrum. And the first few years after that, I really just was only involved really as a mother trying to navigate the system with a young child. And then about around 2006, so about 11 years ago, I was on a listserv of just this local kind of, you know, listserv where parents would, you know, constantly write in with all their concerns and fears, and all these other parents would write in with, you know, oh yes, we're having this terrible problem too. And there was one person who regularly would reply something to the effect of, well, I don't know anything about parenting, and I don't know if this is what your child is experiencing, but when this happens to me, this is what's going on, and this is what I've learned to figure out to deal with it. And I just found those posts so amazingly helpful. I started kind of collecting them, and I really wanted to meet this person, but I didn't know how to meet this random autistic woman who was making these posts. And in my NT manipulative way, I noticed that she was interested in science, and I'm a researcher, so I do things like journal clubs. So I offered to lead a little journal club about autism research. And this woman, Dora, took the bait and wanted, you know, and actually offered to have our journal club in her living room. So we started meeting in her living room to discuss the autism literature. And those meetings just devolved immediately into rants. I mean, we just, you know, it was Dora, me, and two other women, another autistic woman and another parent. And we just ended up calling it like the rift. And it was just this huge rift between what we were seeing in the literature and what actually really mattered to autistic people. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't long. I mean, we only really had a few meetings when we started kind of making the connections. I do community-based participatory research. So I work with members of any marginalized community trying to actually do research in partnership with them. And as I would be listening to Dora in particular kind of rant about the problems of each individual study we were looking at, I would just kind of switch the words. And I was at the time working on this big NIH-funded study with the African-American community. And I could just change the word African-American to autistic and white to neurotypical. And it was the same discussions we were having. So, and really just a few journal clubs into it, Dora and I decided, well, okay, maybe I'm not an autism researcher and maybe I know nothing about autism. And maybe Dora had been intending to study robot brains and not do this, but maybe we could actually work together to do community-based participatory research around things that matter to autistic individuals. And that's kind of how we founded Aspire. That was now 11 years ago. And we've had, you know, a really wonderful time working together and with a lot of other autistic individuals to do research that we really care about.
That's amazing. Dora, could you tell us about what Aspire does, or kind of, you know, the overarching focus of Aspire?
Yes. Yeah, so Aspire is an informal research organization. We've been around, as Christina says, for quite a while at this point. And we've had the same mission statement since the start, which is, you know, just in a nutshell, is doing research with the adult autism community or the adult autistic community to do things that we feel are important things for research to do, to answer research questions that are important to the community, and to include autistic people in that process of research. So when Aspire first started, our academic expertise was primarily Christina's public health expertise. So that's where the group started doing research related to health and healthcare, because of course my community wants better health and healthcare. So there was a kind of good lineup there in desire from the community and expertise within the academic portion of the team. As time has gone by, we're now considered autism researchers. So we've built up that expertise and been able to expand into other areas, looking at employment and violence victimization, and even had so we've been able to expand into other areas that are of import to the community. We do research in, you know, scientific research. We're not a policy group, but we do hope that people will use the results of our research in policy and advocacy as well.
Really fantastic. Super. Christina, can you just elaborate for us on how Aspire brings together academics and community members?
Well, so, you know, we use a participatory approach, and there's many different types of participatory approaches. What has worked well for us is that Dora and I kind of co-lead Aspire. We had started off as with me being the academic co-director and Dora being the community co-director, But over time, Dora has gotten her PhD and crossed over to the dark side. And now we actually are, we still co-direct everything, but we're less clear about our you know, who exactly is doing what, and that we both just really collaborate together as, you know, good colleagues and good friends more than anything else. So we both lead everything. And then we have a pretty large team made up of other individuals. We have it fluctuates, but probably about 8 to 10 autistic individuals, a few parents and disability services providers, and then depending on the and also a few just other academics who are interested in autism and disability and healthcare research. And we work together, you know, mostly remotely. We work all over the, you know, we have team members all over the country, but we Dora and I kind of lead the projects. We come up with you know, materials and things for each meeting, and then everything after that happens as a group. So we've gotten, you know, really good collaboration from our autistic partners on every phase of the project. We work with them to figure out what it is we want to study. We work with them to figure out how we're going to do it. We work together to come up with, you know, consent forms and protocols and data collection instruments. We work together to kind of interpret our results and figure out how we're going to publish them, or what else we're going to do with them. And so ultimately it's a really strong collaborative process.
It sounds like it's really generating some pretty positive results. So I'm kind of curious to know from both of you, kind of in what ways you feel like the autism community in particular is gaining benefits from bridging this gap between academics and the general community, as opposed to kind of how it maybe has been done, you know, so far really for the neurotypical community. Dora, would you mind kind of talking about that first?
Sure. So first of all, I don't think there is an as opposed to doing so for the neurotypical community. Mm-hmm. The approach to research that we use is a reaction to how marginalized communities in general have been. There's been a lot of injustice done, mm-hmm, through science and through research. And there's a lot of ways in which scientific institutions and academic institutions can serve as part of the system of institutionalized oppression. So community-based participatory research was a way of pushing back against that. And it's a way of kind of changing those dynamics of academics and science in order to do something that actually breaks those systems of oppression and gives marginalized communities the power of science and the power of the academic institution to get their agendas met. So I think when you're talking about what we do, I don't see a large difference between the benefit to the autistic community and the benefit. One of my other research projects is with young adults who have had experienced first episode psychosis. Mm. And well, I guess they're not neurotypical, so that's a bad example. But
I've done it with communities. I promise.
So this primarily was originally used with communities of color or communities that are being affected by health community health issues in areas, geographical locations with low socioeconomic, mm-hmm, status. And so when we talk about the benefits, I think that the benefits of CBPR and the benefits of academic community partnerships are to empower communities to meet their own agendas using the privilege of science and academia. And that goes into capacitation within the community. I mean, I never would have gotten my PhD and become, you know, on my path to becoming an independent researcher in my own right without what Aspire did for me through the CBPR capacitation process. It includes being able to get data that advocacy groups can use to make their point. It's in having the weight of the researcher come in and say, no, what these people who you've discounted are saying is real. You know, so I think that there are many, many benefits that come from kind of leveraging the privilege of science to empower the ways in which the autistic community has been marginalized or pushed aside, and kind of give us power to. And then there's also the benefits of if you're doing intervention research like what Aspire does, there's the benefits of the actual interventions and products that we build. So like, we're able to, create a toolkit to help autistic adults get better health care. So there are also direct benefits outside of research and empowerment that are just to life improvement, because that's the kind of work we do. Although you can also take this approach to research with basic science or really anything. Also, I think that it also benefits both the community and the academics in terms of being able to understand each other better. And increasing communication and understanding is always a benefit to everybody. And I think the more neurotypical academics who understand the community's issues, you know, they'll go and they'll spread that to their colleagues too. So I also see a benefit to increasing the understanding on the part of the non-autistic partners in our group of who we are and how to communicate with us, and better respect and better understanding and all of those things that are good.
Mm. Christina, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Well, Dora covered a lot of it and really well. I guess from the researcher standpoint, there's things that I can do in partnership with the autistic community that I wouldn't be able to do by myself. And I think that's also, ultimately, the point is, I think for any researcher to do research that actually affects the world, that's why you spend all this time and energy to do this. And it's just a lot more likely that, you know, a researcher's work will have an impact when, you know, including people from the community on the research team. I mean, I think we end up studying stuff that is of greater value to the community. We also end up just on a really practical level having a better time doing it. I mean, it's simple things like, how do you collect data? Well, we spend a lot of time with our autistic partners wordsmithing and tinkering and playing with all of these questions, because standard questions just don't work very well. And, you know, a lot of the surveys that are out there, they, you know, when we ask our, you know, autistic partners, hey, what do you think of this survey? They try to answer them and they can't, not because they have a problem, but because the surveys themselves are just written in such a way that they're not really accessible to autistic individuals, especially people who might have issues with language pragmatics or other things. So we work with our partners really, you know, meticulously going over everything and making it ultimately produce better research, because I'm going to get better study findings if people understand the questions I'm asking them. Mm-hmm. But again, mm-hmm. This shouldn't be that hard. But in fact, so much research is done without input from the community, and then you just get bad research results because people aren't, in fact, able to answer correctly or aren't able to understand the instructions, or we just can't recruit people because what we have in a flyer is accidentally offensive, even though we didn't mean it that way. So again, it's ultimately our goal is to really make research be as impactful as possible. And I feel like it's almost a necessary step to do it in partnership with the community if you're going to really do good, rigorous, helpful research.
Could not agree more. Christina, can you please tell everybody where they can find you and where they can get more information about what you're doing?
So Aspire has a website that's really our research partnership, and that is at, you know, I guess, http://, but it's Aspire, AASPIRE.org. We also have a healthcare toolkit that we've been working on with some NIH research funding. So we created this healthcare toolkit for autistic adults to use with their primary care providers to try to better communicate with their primary care providers, to try to prepare for visits, things like that. And that toolkit is available at autismandhealth.org, all one word, autismandhealth.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Really fantastic interview. I loved it. And we're going to be moving on to our segment.
Can you also make one more plug?
Of course. Yes. Please do.
So remember I was saying that kind of Dora and I met 11 years ago in her living room, you know, ranting about the big rift between what we were seeing in the autism literature and what autistic adults actually wanted to see in the autism literature. And it's funny kind of how life takes you in interesting directions. And 11 years later, not only have we been doing Aspire, but we're also launching, not us, Marianne Liebert Publishers are launching a new peer-reviewed scientific journal on autism in adulthood. And I've got the great privilege of being editor-in-chief. Dora is going to be our associate editor. And we're so excited that out of those like little, you know, living room rants has actually come a new journal that'll be focused specifically on autism in adulthood. We have been putting together a spectacular editorial board. I am just so happy with the incredible researchers and practitioners and autistic community leaders that have agreed to be on our board. And we're planning on putting out our first preview issue this May. We are actively looking for autistic individuals to be a part of the journal as peer reviewers, as, putting in personal essays, all sorts of other other ways that we're going to try to make sure that autistic perspectives are included in the academic literature. So there'll be more on that to come. But if anyone is interested in being a part of the journal, they can contact us via email at this point. It's so new, we still don't even have our website up and running. But the email to use for that will be S as in Sam, D as in David, H as in Harry, I as in Institute, it's SDHI at PDX, P for Portland, D for David, X for X-ray, .edu. So SDHI at PDX.edu. We'll be sending out more information about the journal very soon.
If it makes it easier to remember, that stands for Social Determinants of Health Initiative.
Fantastic. Really awesome. I'm very excited about that myself. I'm glad we're able to go ahead and plug it here, because I was so thrilled when you told me about it that I'm so excited to be able to be talking about it here. So fantastic. So please go check out what they're doing. Really important stuff for our community going on there. We're going to go on to the segment. If you ladies will join us, we're going to be talking neurodiverse relationships.
And specifically neurodiverse working relationships.
Yes.
Becca, one of the things that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about on our own, but maybe we haven't talked about here on the podcast so far, is kind of one, how you and I got to know each other, and then two, kind of how we've been able to make our neurodiverse working relationship really work for both of us.
Yep, absolutely. I was at the time, we kind of shared office space. I guess that's the best way to discuss it. We met through, at the time I was working at AHA, and you were at Spectrum Services as you are now. We had an office there and we kind of met through there. I felt comfortable with you right away, I have to say. It really was. I think it's probably introvert to introvert comfort that happened. It's a little bit like that. But I think in getting in as I was going through very much at that time, learning to articulate what was going on for myself, it was really helpful to me to be surrounded by people who were understanding of kind of that piece and were, you know, part of that kind of journey with me. And so I think I did a lot of, you know, practice articulating, I think, with UK. Like, I was really kind of working out how to discuss the things that, or how to put language to the things I was struggling with. And I was comfortable enough to be able to say things to you, like, I don't know, what is, you know, what is the neurotypical advice for this situation? I don't know what to do in this, or, you know, does this make sense to you as a neurotypical, things like that. And I think out of that, you know, we did support group together, and that was amazing. And we really got to learn each other's strengths and weaknesses out of all of that.
Well, and I think one of the things that for me as a clinician, I don't always have an opportunity on like a professional, more social kind of level to really sit down and say, hey, can you tell me about your experience with this? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, can you talk to me about like what happens in these situations? And because I think we were able to get, really forge a very like comfortable relationship, you were always able to be very open with me and kind of help me really go to an expert, you know, herself, and be able to kind of have that improved understanding that I was able to take into my clinical practice just based on your own understanding. And that, I think, really was something that was nice for me. I mean, you were even involved with some of my clinical cases at various points. I mean, doing fun exposure work, all kinds of fun things. Mm-hmm. But I think that what for both of us, you know, what we came to learn from that experience was like the understanding of each other's strengths, as well as kind of knowing like, oh, that's really not an optimal circumstance for you or for me. And then recognizing those things so that we then could take that and really, I think, fruitfully apply it to our working relationship going forward.
Absolutely. And it was, you know, it's so important too, because what happens is then it becomes both sets of relationships. So it was really great because it was a way to also say, well, now I'm working on something in a professional context, but I'm still at have this comfort level with this person and I'd rather do the work with them on that, you know? And so we became able to ask each other things as colleagues as well out of that, mm-hmm. which was really, you know, it's been really helpful for us, I think, to be able to do that. And of course, out of that came the podcast, which is where we sit right now.
That's right.
Because who else would I want to talk to about this stuff but you? So why not? Now I'm doing two things. It's multitasking then. So
there you go.
Mm-hmm. What's it like for you guys, for you, Dora and Christina? Has your relationship sort of developed kind of in a similar way and kind of tag teaming each other like that?
Christina and I kind of share a brain.
We do.
I don't know if it's because we're both sort of, I don't know, feisty people from New York who have ended up in sedate Pacific Northwest who like research or what, but mm-hmm. I think some of your observation of a sort of automatic falling into a comfort level is true of us. I don't know that I feel like we tag team as much as we mind merge.
It's actually, I feel really bad because when it was just the two of us, it was just, we just developed this like just really close working relationship. And now we have all these students and research assistants and we just have to constantly go like, wait a second, no, other people aren't mind merging. We have to slow down and actually tell people what we're thinking because we just really connect very easily. I mean, obviously any working relationship, you know, takes a lot of work, but for the most part, we really complement each other really well. And sometimes it's tag teaming, as you say, because there are some things that Dora does a lot better and there's other things that I do better. And we kind of learn to help each other out. But some of it's also that we actually have very similar brains. I mean, whether or not we each have the same diagnosis, I mean, there's mm-hmm. parts that are just also we happen to have very similar kind of ways that we think about things, even though Dora's a total introvert and I'm a complete extrovert. And even though, you know, if you meet us, you probably think we're quite different. in terms of just like how we actually think of a problem, we work really well together. And then we have also learned to kind of accommodate each other's needs. I mean, there's things that I've learned that I need to do as accommodations for Dora. On the other hand, there's also stuff that she does to accommodate me. Like I don't work very well by myself, and I have lots of like ideas in my head, and I just need her to come. And we call it sort of, you know, academic FC, facilitated communication, but I sometimes just need her to come and be there while I like just spout out a lot of stuff, and she helps me kind of put it into some form of order and then go and do my work. And that's as much as an accommodation that I need from her as the various, you know, different accommodations that I make to accommodate the official disability side of things.
And you know, we're also friends. And when I think about all my best working relationships, it's always been with somebody I'm also friends with. So I think that that's a component. I don't think you can separate out work from friendship at some point, especially when you're doing a kind of intense career work.
Yeah, I find that for me, that's very similar experience as well. I find that I don't work well with people that I'm not friends with. Like I just can't do that thing. I wonder how much of that is because I do like to do the things I enjoy the most. And so the same thing that makes them someone good to work with is the same thing that would make them a good friend, that we have this shared passion for, you know, for me, it happens to be autism. And so that is kind of like, you know, that same thing. And it was always whatever that interest was that I was working on was the same interest that, you know, kind of connected me with the people socially. And I don't know that I can do it without it.
Interject, because I also think there's something that I'm shocked that it hasn't come up more in the time that we've been doing the podcast together. We have another shared interest, and that is our cats.
Right. I know. I think I bite my tongue about it publicly. Like, I shouldn't be the crazy cat lady that I am all over the place. But yes, we do. We share that. We share, you know, just that one thing is enough almost to kind of put it over for me. If someone's a cat person, I'm in already. But it's sort of a quirky thing that we ended up having in common. That wasn't the thing that started our relationship.
Oh, no.
But it was something that down the line we found out we were both equally crazy. And when I remember when I was looking at my two black cats that I have now, I found them as kittens. They were foster cats. And I saw their picture. And the first person that I went to is Kate. I like ran into her office. Do you see them? Would you not take them home immediately? That's kind of what I had to go through with her, because we developed sort of a friendship where all of my little quirks about being autistic I suddenly didn't think about, and it was just like I was me, and I didn't have to worry about it in that relationship anymore, which is nice.
Well, and I think that, like, in my head, like, that should be the goal for all relationships in life in general. But that, you know, might be a slightly, like, you know, overly willing for the world to evolve, but I still aspire to that.
You should. I mean, and that's, you know, and I do too. And maybe that's another thing that is the reason that, you know, you collectively want to work and or be friends with people that are like-minded. I mean, that's the idea. So, you know, we just all have to hang out in large groups so that we have the numbers that we need. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for us today. I wanted to thank you guys so much again for coming. It was really a pleasure. It's nice to have another set of women who are doing something similar to what we're doing. And it's nice to have you guys represented here. So real pleasure again, guys. If you're looking for them, please go check out aspire.org. It's with double A's, please. And check out what they're doing. Really good to get to know them. And if you're looking for us and you want to hear more podcasts, please check out differentbrains.org and check out their Twitter at diffbrains, as well as look for them on Facebook. If you're looking for me, you can find me at www.beccalaurie.com, or you can look for me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter.
And I can be found at drcody@spectrumpsychservices.com or on my website, which is www.spectrumpsychservices.com. Please be sure to subscribe, rate us on iTunes, and don't hesitate to send questions to spectrumlyspeaking@gmail.com. And let's keep the conversation going.
Spectrumly Speaking is a production of Different Brains. For more information, visit us at differentbrains.com.